Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Probably True. This week I'm talking with writer and podcaster Hugh Lemmy about a hookup in Spain that took an unusual turn.
And I had this like sort of strange feeling of something is going to happen.
But first, a quick thank you to Andrew Deakin and Dr. Alfredo Carpinetti, both of whom have become patrons of the show by essentially buying me a drink on the internet. If you find value in these lovely little filthcasts and would like to have your name join theirs in the Scrolls of Glory, just visit patreon.com/probablytrue. If, like me, you find yourself a little short on cash, you can also spread the love by telling your friends how great the show is. Preferably tell your richer ones first, but I'm not that picky. Right, enough of that. Off we go.
You're listening to Probably True. Please be aware that this podcast may contain strong language and adult themes. It would be boring without them.
Picture the scene, it's sort of 4 a.m. in the morning, but I haven't been misbehaving, I've just been like up late.
Studying the Bible.
Studying the Bible, yeah, saying my prayers. I can't remember, I had a deadline or something like this, and I was sort of, you know, things were dragging on, I spent too long on Wikipedia or something. And it was 4 a.m. and I was home alone, so I was going to go to bed, and I brushed my teeth and turned off the lights and shuttered up the the windows. And then obviously just like did a last sort of check of all the apps. And I had a message on Grindr from this guy. And there was just something sort of mysterious. There was an energy to his message and to his profile. It was like, there was very sparse. It was headless, but it wasn't like a naked torso. It was just like, he was discreet. And he sent this message, which was just like, can I suck your dick? That was his first message. And normally like that's a real turn off.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to kind of be seduced a little bit, you know, just whapping it out and sticking it in someone's mouth.
Yeah, and I don't know why I said yes.
Because it was 4 a.m. probably.
Because it was 4 a.m. And I think that's an aspect of it. Like, I was like, oh, well, it won't be a wasted night, you know. Tomorrow I can say, well, I wasn't just like up on Wikipedia all night. It's kind of tragic. So he...
I think we've all been there, though.
Yeah, we have, yeah. He came over in about 10 minutes. And as soon as I opened the door, I got this very intense vibe off him. He was sort of young, like I'd say, like mid-20s, maybe. He wasn't particularly big. He wasn't, like, taller than me or broader than me or anything. But he walked straight into my house as soon as I opened the door, like, barely a hello. And I had this, like, sort of strange feeling of something was going to happen. And part of that was slightly terrified, you know, like, I don't... Maybe this is it. Maybe this is the tragic end that you're sort of led to believe you're going to have as a gay man.
And was that... was that kind of scary or was that a little bit exciting? Or?
It was both. It was both. And I didn't really know how to take it, but he just sort of walked straight in and asked for a glass of water. So I got my glass of water. And the house was very dark anyway. It was like a sort of low-ceilinged sort of Spanish apartment, like lower-level apartment with these sort of cold tiled floors and the windows were shuttered. So it was really sort of a little cave in there, which sort of added to the atmosphere, I guess. And I turned off all the lights except for one in the hall and then my bedside lamp. I gave him the glass of water. He said, thank you. And then he walked straight into my room. And so I followed him in. And then he turned the light off. You know, we hadn't spoken at this point. And he just walked straight over to the light and turned it off. And I was sort of judging myself a bit. I was like, he doesn't want to see me. You know, like, sort of insecurities might come out. Like, maybe this is what he's looking for. But then suddenly, like, I felt his hands on me. And then so we started to have sex. And we're making out a bit. And then the sex was really strange. Like, he was younger than me, but it wasn't quick, like, wham, bam, but it was like trying one thing and then after, like, 30 seconds shifting, trying something else, you know, like the way he was interacting with my body was, like, very disjointed. And I could just tell, like, as a sort of person who gets anxious myself, that he had some, like, he was really in his head. But he was quite aggressive about it, but he was, like, also quite submissive, you know, like power bottomy. I don't know. So I felt this strange, I couldn't really figure out what was going on. Like, he didn't really know what he was doing almost. Anyway, so he continues like this for sort of 15 minutes. And then he's asking me to be like quite aggressive towards him, you know, like to slap him and stuff, you know. Oh. Like,
Were you enjoying this? And like the disjointedness, was it really distracting, or were you kind of getting into it a bit? Or
I was kind of getting into it because I think I read it as he's kind of kinky, and then like he doesn't, yeah, and then that was his vibe, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, okay, something, this is kind of interesting. Like, it's not just like someone wanting to get off quickly.
Not quite what you signed up for, but give it a go.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And but he was like quite kinky. Like, he was like asking me to spank him basically, mm-hmm. and stuff like this. So I was like, sure. And then he said, stop, stop, stop. And I was like, okay, sure. And he's like, I'm really sorry, I've just never done this before. And I thought he was talking about like being more kinky. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's fine, we can just make out or whatever. And he's like, no, I've never been with a man before.
Dun, dun, dun. I'll be back with more from Hugh after this.
I don't want to say like a lightning strike, but almost like someone had just like ripped a piece of paper in half. Like, I'd been in one world, one dynamic, one form of relationship where I'd assumed quite a lot about this guy in terms of like what he wanted, his power dynamics, you know, like the aggression with which he came into the house and said what he wanted and started doing it.
Mm, which is kind of sexy.
Was kind of sexy. And then this suddenly, like, I have no clue what I'm doing and this is terrifying for me. So obviously, like, I stopped and I sat on a bed with him. And we had like a long conversation, like maybe 45 minutes to an hour. But he was closeted, obviously. Mm. He was visiting. He didn't live in the city. He had a girlfriend back home, and he had this sort of very, very seemingly well-off conservative American life. Family orientated around, you know, like the yacht club, almost the country club. Like,
wow.
Your dad's deciding what you're going to do. You know, he was full of all this like immense sadness about, you know, like being forced into this sort of lifestyle.
It's nice that you were there for him for that more than anything. I mean, so many people would have just been like, oh, all right, fine, leave then if you're not going to have sex with me. And
yeah,
so
I mean,
it was nice,
I guess.
To be, it's good that you could like lend an ear and listen to him.
I mean, I hope so. I hope you found it useful. But I was really torn in this conversation because I didn't want to scare him off, you know, like, because he asked me about my life and I was like, well, I live here with my boyfriend. Like, he's working away at the moment. He's like, you got a boyfriend? And I'm like, well, yeah, but we have an open relationship. And that was like totally alien to him as a concept, obviously. And I was like, yeah, I'm a writer, like, blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, I really want to be a writer, but my dad says I have to do this or that. And yeah, we talked about it a bit. And there was also this other feeling. There was like, it was a very tender moment because like I was kind of just holding him, which he was happy with, you know, like I was like, what can I do in this situation? Well, like, I can just like put my arm around this person. And there's a few other things. One of which is I realized, contrary to like what I was like when I came out, which was a long time ago, I was quite young, I think he had learned basically most of what he knew about being gay from porn. So I realized that this disjunctive, in some ways kinky sort of things that he was asking me to do was because there were all things that he'd seen and had turned him on.
Yeah.
And he was trying to reenact it. But then obviously he seemed to be locked in his head quite a lot. So like it wasn't necessarily enjoyable, or it was scary, or, you know, like, but he was like throwing himself at a deep end. Like, this is what I've seen. And I found that very strange as well. And afterwards I felt really guilty because I kind of felt like if he explained it from the start, which obviously he probably couldn't find the words to do it, you know, like he didn't go there looking for a shoulder to cry on. Like, he wanted to go there to explore his sexuality in practice or something. But if I'd known that, then I would have been totally different in the way I approached sex with him.
But it sounds like, you know, you did the best you could with the knowledge you had at the time. As things unfolded, you dealt with it and you adapted your behaviour. You weren't just like, all right, well, this is what it's like with a man. Bang!
This is what really fucked me off, is that that is a burden that's put on gay people the whole time. I didn't ask to be put in that position. Like, I went online at 4 a.m. and someone said they wanted to come over and suck me off. So that's what I signed up for.
Yeah.
And then half an hour in, I'm obliged. I mean, not obliged, but I feel like as a person who had the capability to do it, like you kind of are obliged, or you do have some sort of moral responsibility in a situation if you can provide some support to do it. But like, that doesn't happen with, well, maybe it does happen with straight people, especially women have to probably provide a lot of emotional care. Suddenly, like 4 a.m., 4:30 a.m., I had to like switch into this mode of like a counsellor, because his own environment he grows up in, his own family, all his friends, so he said, like, I can't tell any of my friends this because I'll never have any friends again.
Wow.
When he said that, I was like, why is it like, as a gay person, you suddenly are thrown into this role of counsellor because of giving unconditional love, basically, because all these people are supposed to care about this person, don't have the capability to give him unconditional love because of their own bigotry. Mm. I mean, I'm sure that if he came out, actually loads of his friends would probably support him.
We'd like to think so.
I mean, it would be difficult, obviously, but to like be someone's counsellor or parent figure in this situation because people in his own life can't give him love. And I was like, why? That's this sort of strange, I'm your new mummy now, so I want to offer this support. But like that is a key thing in like gay families, like chosen queer families. So you meet people, it's like you have to like suddenly take these roles. And I guess that's one thing I do like. And like people obviously did it for me when I was a teenager and in my early 20s. So I'm glad that, you know, you can pass on for somebody else. Mm. It made me really angry at a time when he left. I was really pissed off that he lives in an environment where there is no offer of unconditional love.
And he had to turn to a stranger on the internet, which, I mean, that could have gone horribly for both of you as well. So, yeah. Like, well done on doing what you could, I mean.
And I got quite a lot of out of it as well in the end, because I began to think about the way that you perceive people online, on Grindr and stuff like this. When you perceive people, obviously, in the best, they're giving their best side. And quite often you can have quite unpleasant experiences when you meet people. And that was it wasn't pleasant, but it wasn't like unpleasant. But sometimes, you know, you can go into experiences where you get quite bruised, where people can be quite cruel to you and stuff like this. Or you can get ghosted or, you know, all these sort of aspects. And now I really rethought it through seeing somebody who, he was in such a moment of crisis that he couldn't help but be vulnerable. But to realise actually a lot of people are very vulnerable when they use apps because they are trying to explore a lot of emotional issues that they're struggling with themselves through a physical relationship in some way, which, you know, is fine. Like that is what a lot of sex is. And that's what's interesting, exciting and good about it. But at the same time, if you're perceiving that everyone you meet is like switched on and comfortable and happy of themselves
and able to cope with whatever you need to talk about.
Yeah. Mm. And then they do something cruel to you. You can't help but then take that on yourself. I had this like vague memory, like coming back to me at the time, which was before I came out or when I was like very young, there was something vaguely unsettling about happy gay people. Happy gay people, when you're an unhappy gay person, a terrified gay person, and you're not out or you're struggling with it, there's something almost threatening about it or very disconcerting, you know, that like, yeah, I don't know. Well, that was my memory. So I didn't want to say to him like, you have to do this or you have to do that or like, you can have this or anything like that. I just like, don't beat yourself up about any desires you have. Like, you can choose whatever route you want to go down. There's no path set out for you, but don't feel either scared or disgusted by something that you feel. Mm. I don't know.
I've mentioned a couple of times when I was growing up, the happy gay guy was always like 21 and blonde and had perfect teeth and was usually had a six pack and was just in some pants on the cover of a magazine. And if you weren't that image,
yeah,
then you weren't doing gay properly. And
yeah, definitely. Yeah. But then also like there's a strange thing, I think, where you see something and you don't want it, but you're also annoyed you can't have it. I had the same feelings, but I didn't, in my heart of heart, want to be that person, but I was annoyed that I couldn't be the person that I wanted to be. And I guess since then, for example, sometimes you're chatting with somebody and like it's going really well and you're being really flirty or whatever, or you're saying what you want to do and things, and then you're like, okay, we'll come over, and then they disappear. Mm. And I think I would have been really hurt by that in the past, whereas now I think when that happens, I think, you know what, sometimes you have to do that when you come to terms with your sexuality or you're working through something. You're experimenting, you know, you want to see what someone says to you, blah, blah, blah. But then when it comes to it, you just can't go through it. You're too anxious. You've got too many issues going on. So actually, if we stop centering ourselves in our sexual relationships with hookups as well, and actually give a bit of generosity towards other people that we're around, then it can actually produce a lot of rewards for ourselves and can give you a lot more sense of self and security. So like now I don't get upset particularly when I encounter like rejection or cruelty on apps. I kind of try and put myself into their position and think, oh, well, I wonder what they're going through in order that's the way they have to express themselves, blah, 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 which is like a super hippie thing to say, but I think is a valuable lesson that I learned from that experience. Like, it's really not to do with you at all. You're just this collateral damage in their own life sometimes. So yeah, it can feel very horrible because you're thinking about yourself, but actually if you center them in their own sex life, then those things stop being so bad. And then also when things do go well and you're a more generous, thoughtful lover, I guess, I mean, the sex is better than the anxious, neurotic sex of, am I hot? If this person fucks me, then it's proof. You can't really second guess the nature of someone else's desire anyway. There are a lot of people who are maybe like stereotypically hot, the hottest person around, but the thing they're into is not other hot people anyway. I mean, thank God.
There's hope for all of us.
Yeah, you can't second guess other people's desires and tastes. And if they express an interest, then just take it in good faith that they mean it. They're not playing some sort of game with you.
What would you say to people who are in the similar position to your gentleman caller?
Oh, well, it's hard because I've not been in that situation now for like almost, I don't know, 20 years. Go easy on yourself. You don't have to make any decisions now. You can take things at your own pace, experiment, see what feels good. If you have a feeling, yeah, like that's kind of what I said to him, was just go easy on yourself. Try not to feel guilty about any desires you feel. Just try and see how they feel first of all. And that also goes not just for like feeling guilty about being gay in the first place or for those same sex desires, but also for me, I think the vibe I got off this guy was that he was also really terrified about having to be a certain type, fit into a certain type of gay life or gay culture. I wanted to say to him, like, you don't have to adopt all that. Just find your own way into like what you feel comfortable with. If you still enjoy doing something like this or do like that, or you want to try something new, just, yeah, don't beat yourself up about it. Yeah, you're not wrong.
Okay, and then the other group, I suppose, would be the people who are in your position who are just after getting their dick sucked or their bum spanked or whatever, and then suddenly they find themselves with this very vulnerable person who needs someone to be more emotional support than just kind of sexual gratification. What would you say was a good piece of advice for anyone who does find themselves in that position?
Just try and be open to that person's needs in that moment. I don't know, life's not fair, and this is part of being part of a gay community or being part of a gay culture, is you have to support your brothers and sisters. And that's what's so nice about it, and that's why people can come out and be ostracized by our families and still find some semblance of people who understand them, because it's far from perfect culture, but there are these legacies of like looking after vulnerable people. Enough times where I've been in a gay bar and seen a steaming drunk 21-year-old, and people who don't know this person have no need to give up their time or whatever for this person, will take care of them and we'll get them in a taxi or take them home or, you know, get them the water, because we've all been in that situation of being lost and scared and trying to find someone who will look after us when often our families and the people we grew up with won't. There's a guy I follow on Twitter who repeatedly retweets this same tweet, which is, be brave enough to be kind. And I think that's like a really interesting thought. It takes a lot of guts to be vulnerable enough to actually step back and be kind to that person. I think we'd all do better if we were brave enough to be kind.
So where can people follow you, find you, stalk you if they want to on the interwebs? Where are you?
I'm on Twitter at Hugh Lemmy, H-U-W-L-E-M-M-E-Y. I've got a podcast as well called Bad Gays Podcast that I co-host with Ben Miller. I'm also an author. I've got a new book just coming out, which is called Red Tory, and my last book was called Chubbs.
Cool. And they're available at all good booksellers, presumably?
Yeah, I think so.
Excellent.
Yes. And also maybe don't just hook up with a random stranger at 4 a.m. Oh, no, that's bad advice. It's actually fine. Why not? Try it.
Yeah, I nearly said don't go straight to Hugh for your emotional support unless it's you're going to suck him off afterwards, but yeah. I thought that was even worse.
That was Probably True, the repeatedly award-winning storytelling series created by me, Scott Flashheart, to remind all of my queer brothers and sisters that we are none of us alone. You can find transcripts of every episode, links and other things at probablytruepodcast.com. There's additional content and other lovely stuff available to subscribers at patreon.com/probablytrue. And if you want to get in touch, just search Probably True Podcast on the socials.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.